from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at WVHTF.org.
At the legislature today, Senator Bill Cole officially took over as the leader of the upper chamber last week, but has been working on his agenda since the GOP sweep on Election Day. He joins us to discuss his legislative priorities. In the Senate, a bill to repeal the prevailing wage gets pulled from a committee agenda while negotiations between the unions and business energy continue behind the scenes. And in the House, Agriculture Commissioner Walt Helmick details his plans to promote the pork industry on former mountaintop removal mine sites. These stories just ahead on the legislature today. Welcome to the legislature today. I'm Ashton Mara. On yesterday's show, Governor Tomlin alluded to a change in his proposed budget for fiscal year 2016. As it was proposed to lawmakers last week, the governor's budget included some $85 million from the state's rainy day fund. But today, Tomlin and his revenue secretary announced they won't need that much. During a press conference at the Capitol this afternoon, Governor Tomlin announced the state is now benefiting from the monies they've spent years investing in unfunded liabilities in the state public retirement systems. The governor says because of the commitment the legislature made to pay off those debts, the state is now earning a return on its investment, this year to the tune of about $44 million more than originally predicted. That money can now be reinvested in the budget and used to reduce the amount of one-time rainy day funds.
The dollars that are being put into the retirement system with this adjustment that's being presented by the governor is to the penny the amount of money that is required by the actuaries to continue to fully fund our systems. No deviation from that plan that we put a course towards several decades ago is changing. It's just a simple fact of the matter is we're earning more than we were before, so not as much as needed this year in terms of the annual payment.
Tomlin expects to pull only $25 million from reserves to balance this year's budget. Senator Bill Cole is a well-known businessman in southern West Virginia who was elected to the upper chamber in 2012. But as the newly elected Senate president, he's now responsible for setting the Senate's agenda and moving it forward. With us to talk about his priorities for this legislative session, Senate President Bill Cole. Senator, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
I want to start with that announcement that the governor made today. You've said in the past you're very much against pulling from the rainy day fund. Now he's pulled it down to $25 million. How do you feel about that?
Oh, well, that was phenomenal news. We were tickled to death to hear that. And you know what? I don't want to get in a rainy day fund, but you know what? Neither does the governor. Nobody wants to. We'd rather be adding to it rather than taking away from it. But we're just going to work as hard as we can do to try and stay away from that if we can.
So $25 million. Where are areas you think you all could make that up?
Well, you know, we have a few bills out that have to do with auditing state agencies, and we think that a result of that will be to show us where we can find some areas of waste or duplication. That's certainly an area we're looking.
After 2 years of budget cuts, hiring freezes, is there much waste left?
Well, you know what? I'd like to think so. Now, to the governor's credit, this year's budget is less than last year's, but we've lost population in our state for years, and with the advent of technology, it would strike me as reasonable to think that the size of government had been shrinking, but in fact it's grown every single year. So I'm not ready to give up on that, not by a long shot.
So looking for places to cut still, but you've been very frank in saying that you don't believe those places should come in social services.
Well, listen, there's not a program that I'm aware of that we're looking to cut. I mean, everybody comes by my office and says, don't cut my program, but who are they? Well, it's the senior citizens. It's the people that look out for our youth. Whatever it is, it's a good program, and it's tough.
So no plans this year to increase revenues, no tax increases, but you've spoken on major realignment of the state's tax structure. Is that something that can happen this year? Are we going to see major changes right away?
No, I believe that's a one-year project. Well, it's a huge undertaking, but I think if we get to work now that we could be ready for next session with a comprehensive tax overhaul, a tax restructuring. We want to look for opportunities to lower the rates and yet broaden the base.
So we saw a little bit of video in this in the opening of your swearing-in ceremony. Afterwards, you gave a speech saying you want to work to, quote, attract jobs that provide West Virginians with a great living wage. How do we do that?
Well, I think it's a number of things. It's certainly down the lines of tort reform, and we're working hard to that end. Regulatory reform, we need to make our state government more of a partner to business rather than a hindrance to business. There's a lot of things that we can do that won't cost us any money. With the budget in such tough shape, we need to stay revenue neutral, or we need to figure out how we're going to pay for something before we just throw it on the taxpayers.
Well, you mentioned tort reform. You've said you'll focus on reforming some portions of the state's legal system this year. What one area is the top priority? Is there one area that's a top priority?
In tort reform?
Yes.
No, I think it's a number of things. Now, you know, the trial attorneys feel like they're under attack, and I don't mean to have it be that way. Bad things happen to good people, and there's a reason that they need proper representation. I want to take the abuses away from the system. We have a comparative fault bill that's out there, and to me, that's simply a fairness bill. If I'm 30% liable for something and you're 70%, and yet you didn't pay your insurance premiums and can't pay the 70, then all of a sudden I'm looked to pay 100%. That's not fair, I don't believe. We're looking at some other things. We've strengthened in trespass liability that is third reading tomorrow. That strengthens property owners' rights against illegal trespassers. We're looking at nonpartisan election of judges. I think that's a good thing. Go ahead.
Sorry, but you own your own business.
I do.
What is it like doing business in West Virginia?
Well, I also own businesses in Kentucky and Tennessee. So it gives me a good comparison, and Tennessee's a great example. When I showed up day one in the manufacturing company in Tennessee, the state of Tennessee showed up on my door, and they wanted to go over some programs with me. One of them was low interest loans for capital improvement, whether it was buildings or equipment. Another one was tax credits to help train people how to use our equipment. Then you look at West Virginia, and I don't see that kind of cooperation or support coming out of our government, and I'd love to see that. And then back to the tort reform issue, my property and casualty insurance in West Virginia is double what it is for a similarly sized business just across the line in Virginia. And that's simply insurance actuarials that run the numbers and figure out what their exposure is, and they set the rates accordingly.
I want to get to a bill that was kind of in the headlines today, and that's prevailing wage, a bill to repeal the prevailing wage, excuse me. That's a bill that you introduced last year.
I did.
So should we repeal the prevailing wage?
Well, I believe we should. I think that if you just refer back to the study that WVU did a number of years ago, they say that it brings 30% extra cost to a job that's funded through the state. And you know, I'm not against, though it would be argued that I'm against paying good wages, I'm not against paying good wages. I want our people to make more money than ever, but I don't think we're being proper stewards of the taxpayers' dollars, because the money comes from the taxpayers. So they look for us to properly invest or properly spend that dollar, and I think we owe it to the taxpayers to give them the most bang for the buck.
The rules of the Senate and the House were amended last week to include a new provision that allows you or the Speaker of the House to request an economic impact statement, a jobs impact statement. Is this the type of bill that you envisioned requesting those kind of studies on?
Certainly. I think it's a perfect example.
Is that something you intend to do?
In all likelihood, yes.
Senate President Bill Cole, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
The term pork barrel often refers to a government appropriation for local projects secured primarily to bring money to a representative's district. But in the House today, delegates heard of a different kind of pork project. The discussion during the House Committee on Agriculture was centered on using old mountaintop removal sites for hog farming. Liz McCormick reports.
The House Agriculture Committee heard from Agriculture Commissioner Walt Helmick today, which was perfect timing since it's Agriculture Day here at the legislature.
The commissioner's presentation was full of ideas for the future of agriculture in West Virginia. Helmick told lawmakers that West Virginia consumes over $7 billion worth of food. He says only $1 billion of that is actually produced in West Virginia. He asked for bipartisan support from lawmakers, saying West Virginia has a $6 billion opportunity in agricultural jobs. Helmick would like to see hog farming on inactive mountaintop removal sites. He thinks this could bring a significant amount of employment opportunities to southern counties where unemployment is a big problem.
We're looking at mountaintop removal, and it's a big hog industry proposal. Do you look at Boone, Logan, and Mingo County? Sure you do, because in that section there is significant unemployment, but employment opportunities that will always remain there.
Helmick says more people will stay in these counties if these jobs are provided there. He also suggested Wyoming and McDowell counties as other potential places.
Those five counties, as well as many other counties, Webster County, Nicholas County, Greenbrier County, they have mountaintop removal sites that fit a lot of what we want to do. And so we know that we can do some positive things there in those areas, but we already have involvement. The coal association, the coal industry has worked with us.
Helmick says the old mountaintop removal sites can't grow crops, but that hog farming could bring in a great deal of profit. To further his case, Helmick brought in examples of the pork industry in North Carolina.
When you're looking at the pork industry, which down in North Carolina is a $2.5 billion industry, and that's huge, about 30,000 direct jobs. $2.5 billion in one product, and that's the pork industry.
Helmick says West Virginia can do better than North Carolina.
We're situated better than North Carolina. We're situated to the growing market of Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky than they are. And so and they understand that we do have the rail, that we have the three-phase electricity, that we also have water. And we have the remoteness that a lot of industries want. Those areas are remote because you had mining activity. You couldn't have anybody live within 5 or 6 miles of the place. And so those are very positive things for us.
The committee was also given a presentation by the new director of natural resources, Robert Falla. He spoke about the high points seen at the various parks across the state. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charleston.
A bill has been introduced this legislative session to repeal the prevailing wage law. We'll find out more about this issue from one of the state's labor leaders next. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today.
Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 256, to increase the number of unexcused absences from 5 to 10 before action may be taken against the parent, guardian, or custodian of the student. Senate Bill 257, to improve middle school education by requiring stricter standards for college or career readiness. Senate Bill 258, to give each county commission the authority to submit road and bridge construction projects to the Commissioner of Highways. The bill authorizes county commissions to impose a county transportation sales and service tax and a county use tax at a rate not to exceed 1% to finance the construction. Senate Bill 260, to require materials, supplies, equipment, and other items purchased by the state and its agencies to be made in the United States. Senate Bill 267, to repeal the Governor's Office of Health Enhancement and Lifestyle Plan. Up for passage in the Senate tomorrow, Senate Bill 1, repealing certain alternative and renewable energy portfolio standards. and Senate Bill 3 to codify existing common law in West Virginia as it relates to the duty of care owners of property owe trespassers.
The Senate Committee on Labor held its first meeting this morning with a hot-button issue on the agenda, a repeal of the state's prevailing wage. The item was quickly removed, however, because, according to the committee chairman, negotiations between labor and the business energy industry are ongoing. Joining us to discuss the bill tonight is Kenny Perdue. He's the president of the state's largest workers' union, the AFL-CIO. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me over here.
Let's start very basic and explain for our audience, what is prevailing wage? What does that mean?
Prevailing wage starts with Davis-Bacon, which is a federal law that was started back post-Depression, and it was to do two things. One is to give employees a chance to go to work, and it was to level the playing field for contractors to bid on.
So do we still need it? Do we still need prevailing wage in place?
Yes, we do.
Why?
Prevailing wage does many things, and as contractors have submitted in letters, over 100 letters have been sent into House and the Senate to say do not eliminate, do not abolish prevailing wage. For the biggest thing, it could and probably would very well destroy many local contractors, which means so much to the community here in Charleston amongst and around the state. The other thing is you've got a workforce here that is very good. And you're talking about taking money out of the pockets of a workforce that has depended on that for so many years and also typically carries a pension and a health care with it, which continues to contribute to the community.
So then would removing prevailing wage lead to decreased salaries in the industry?
Well, I will say this, and quite frankly, there are many contractors and developers coming out of Southeast that are just waiting for the abolishment of prevailing wage. They will come up here, they will start building projects such as the ones that are being built in this block where we're at, and they will come in and bring their own workforce. And when they bring their own workforce, it is typically a lower paid workforce, which to them, they're not going to contribute any income to the state, but to the workers here, a lot of those workers will have to go elsewhere to try to find something else to do because they will eventually start losing their jobs and contractors will start eventually going out of business.
So after that committee meeting this morning, I spoke with Senator Hall, who's the chair of the Senate Labor Committee, and he said that negotiations are ongoing, that labor and business and lawmakers are talking about it. Are you involved in those negotiations?
Well, the building and trades with a few people will be involved with that, and I will be there to offer any assistance that I can at a time that's necessary.
But you just heard the Senate president say that he thinks it should be repealed, that he backs repealing this law. So how do you convince them otherwise?
Well, we will continually at the discussion table. I have talked with the president, Senate president, many times. And while he does believe that the abolishment is the answer, I think in the end, when you're talking about job preservation and job creation in the state, in the end, there will be some language probably will come out that will be able to retain prevailing wages. Address some of the issues and concerns that people have and that workforce and these contractors will be able to stay in business.
So what if that doesn't happen? What if it's just repealed and there is no compromise?
Well, we hope that better heads prevail in the issue. And if you're going to listen to the people of this state, you're going to listen to over 100 letters from 100 contractors that do business in this state. They pay their taxes, they pay workers' comp, into the unemployment. They have a workforce that's steady and is well trained, and it is our hope that they pay attention to those contractors, which means so much now, because if we're talking about job creation, we don't want to start out with about eliminating jobs and employees and employers in this.
So while we have you here, what other issues is labor looking to this session? What are the major legislative issues for you?
Well, right now, that's been introduced, probably the prevailing wage is the biggest issue. There are many others as we look at, it could very well be something, and we talk so much about safety in the mines, and we talk about tort reform. Those are all around, a lot of that's around safety issues. So if we're talking about safety in the mines, a lot of those safety issues in every mine in this state were created because something happened. We either have state legislation or we have federal legislation. Every one of them was created for a reason. And is it too much? Is it burdensome? Talk to the employees, spouses, or relatives so many of them have been put into the ground. So those are something that's important that people pay attention to. There'll be many more come up. There's a lot of tort reform that we talked about. There's unemployment, workers' comp issues that will be continuing to be addressed over the next 53 days.
Well, Kenny Perdue, president of the AFL-CIO, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm glad to be here.
And we look forward to speaking with you throughout the session.
We'll be back.
Senate President Bill Cole says the way to keep young people in West Virginia is having good jobs readily available to them. And lawmakers know that to get a good job with a good wage, young people need a good education. Introduced in the Senate today, a bill that's goal is to tackle, at least in part, an issue preventing students from receiving that education, truancy.
Question unanimous consent that Senate Bill number 256 through Senate Bill number 269 be considered introduced, read by their titles, and referred to the appropriate committees as shown on the chamber automation system.
Senate Bill 256 was introduced to the full chamber today. Sponsored by Senator Chris Walters of Putnam County, the bill aims at increasing the number of unexcused absences a student can have before the state court system intervenes.
Currently, West Virginia has one of the most aggressive numbers, and that's 5 statewide. That once a child reaches 5 unexcused absences, then he arrives into the court system and can be placed into a facility.
Walter says those students can be placed in either in or out of state facilities, costing the taxpayers some $100,000 per child per year. So Walter's bill suggests increasing the number of unexcused absences from 5 to 10. Before the legal system intervenes, the bill calls for a team of teachers, counselors, and the student's parents to meet and discuss the reasons he or she might be truant. Walter says that allows those closest to the student to get to the source of his or her problems. From a state code perspective, Walter says his bill also defines an unexcused absence, something he says differs from county school system to county school system.
Every county looks at it different, and so we're trying to figure out, and what I'm hoping to work with the chairman and work with the Pew Research Foundation once they get done with the recommendations from the governor, of having to define that unexcused absent part so we can kind of have some working together amongst all the counties so we know one baseline of what we're working off of to deal with these children.
The governor's Intergovernmental Task Force on Juvenile Justice released similar recommendations about how to deal with truancy in December. The governor is expected to introduce a bill encompassing those recommendations sometime next week. And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today.
Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 2103, to require boards of examination in medical fields to maintain a list of disciplinary actions on a public access website. House Bill 2116, to eliminate straight ticket voting as an option on election ballots. House Bill 2117, at the request of the governor, to provide misdemeanor criminal penalties for using automated telephone calls to disseminate false, misleading, or deceptive information with the intent to create panic, incite violence, or cause harm to individuals during a declared state of emergency. House Bill 2120, to permit holders of licenses to carry a concealed deadly weapon on the grounds of the state capitol complex and its buildings, except in the Supreme Court. House Bill 2123, to require students to attend school until the age of 18. House Bill 2152, to prohibit the publication of the names of persons who have been issued licenses to carry a concealed deadly weapon. House Bill 2153, prohibiting abortion after 20 weeks post-fertilization, except when the mother has a medical emergency. House Bill 2159, to elect justices to the Supreme Court of Appeals on a nonpartisan basis beginning in 2016. On second reading in the House tomorrow, the amendment stage, House Bill 2001, to repeal portions of the Alternative and Renewable Energy Portfolio Act. There's a public hearing in the House chamber tomorrow. At issue is House Bill 2011, to address disbursements from the Workers' Compensation Fund where an injury is self-inflicted or intentionally caused by the employer. The bill overrules the decision of the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia issued in October 2013. The public hearing begins tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
This has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, we'll talk with House Speaker Tim Armstead about his legislative agenda this session. On Thursday, the new State Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Michael Martirano, will join us, along with the President of the West Virginia Board of Education, Gail Manchin. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at wvhtf.org.